Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Artificial intelligence raises both hope and fear for medicine's future. Whether you see promise of better care or George Orwell's Big Brother, says as much about you as it does the technology. My guest today has done a deep dive into the world of AI listening in physician exams. She brings facts and figures, the good and potential ugly, when it comes to ambient listening technology. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Laura Landreau. Ms. Landreau is an award-winning writer and journalist. She is a former Wall Street Journal informed patient columnist and assistant managing editor. She's also author of Survivor, Taking Control of Your Fight Against Cancer. Laura Landreau, welcome to Sound Practice.
Glad to be here.
That's an absolute pleasure. So I, along with some of the staff at the American Association for Physician Leadership, were interested in your recent Wall Street Journal article, Why AI May Be Listening In on Your Next Doctor's Appointment. The article explores how AI is being integrated into medical settings through ambient listening technology. Can you describe for our audience what ambient listening technology is?
Well, I think the way we put it in the story that I wrote was, you know, soon even the hospital walls may have ears. The idea is literally that it's ambient in the sense that it's keeping itself in the background, but it is listening to everything that's going on in the medical encounter, so between the clinician and the patient, with the idea of starting to reduce the burden of documentation, the note-taking, the staying long after hours and going over the notes or creating the notes, which of course doctors are required to do. So for a while, I think they were using human scribes. So that's probably one of the first jobs to be eliminated by AI. But this is a technology that listens, manages to sort out the, you know, noise. If you stopped with your patient as a doctor and talked about the weather or how your weekend was, that would be kind of edited out. And what would come out is what the visit entailed, what was described, what was decided, basically the classic doctor's note.
How did you become interested in this topic?
Well, yeah, I've worked at the Wall Street Journal for 35 years, including covering the dawn of electronic medical records and the use of technology and the internet. And when I retired from the journal full time, I continued to be a contributor. And focusing on medical and healthcare issues. And technology only has gotten more important and more central to what's happening in medicine. So I've focused on a lot of ways that technology can improve medicine, improve patient safety. My focus is very much on things that have to do with the patient. So the idea that AI could be helping to accurately record my doctor's appointment and enable doctors to have less burnout so they don't quit and leave us without care, all of those things just really intrigued me about this one.
The article mentions research which shows the technology saves time, reduces physician burnout. What did you learn about that research when you were putting together this great article?
Well, when I spoke to different institutions who are using it, there was like this palpable excitement. And it was one of these things where if you could save a few minutes and get home for dinner, that was a big deal. And so a lot of these institutions actually surveyed their doctors about it. You know, they did the research and they said, what was it that, you know, was the most important thing about this to you? And in almost all cases, they actually mentioned those things. And I know one of the big users of this, and of course, a very famous institution, is Mass General Brigham. And they did a pilot program. They used two different kinds of ambient technology. from different companies. And the doctors actually reported cutting their daily documentation time outside of clinic hours. And it's outside of clinic hours that was important to them, from 90 minutes to under 30 minutes. And about 80% of them said they focus more on their patients and actually indicated they were more likely to extend their careers instead of retiring early, like all us boomers or those doctors are getting ready to pack it in. But anyway, they love the technology. And I think the chief medical information officer there said that giving the doctors back time for their own lives was transformative. So
powerful word.
Yes.
That's the view from the clinician side. We don't have to go too far down this path on the patient side to have somebody raise their hand and say, what about privacy?
Right.
Should patients be concerned?
Well, I think, look, if you've been in the healthcare system at all in the last few years, you've probably gotten one of those notifications that said, we're sorry to say all of your personal data has been compromised in a breach. I've had them. So yes, we're always concerned about privacy. And I think that's one of the confidence walls they have to, you know, get over to make this acceptable for patients. They have done some surveys of patients. And in fact, at the University of Michigan, they did a survey. There were patients who were thought it was really cool and others who it didn't bother. So that for them, the idea that, you know, we're okay with this or we're not opposed to it was sort of interesting. And I think they have to do the same thing. They have to HIPAA consent. They have to go through every time you talk to a patient, you have to say, I'm using this technology to listen to you. Once this recording is made, the recording's gone, but what will be left is this note. I'm going to review the note as I would any other note, and you're going to have the note. So you will know whether it's accurate or not. Now, on the privacy front, they have to be able to reassure them that, like the rest of their medical records, because that's what this is doing, it's going into their medical record. They have to say that as part of your medical record, we're going to keep this as, you know, confidential. And that's where I think a lot of people have concerns. And this just adds another layer of information about us that's going to be in those records. And it is kind of, it behooves the medical profession and the legal profession to continue to, you know, convince us that our private information is private.
Are there certain areas of medicine where it's not being used because of the overly sensitive nature? I'm thinking of maybe psychiatric records, addiction records, sexual violence care. Are there some places that the medical community so far has just said off limits for these type of topics, but on other areas it's fine to use?
Well, in most of the places that I talked to, the primary users were primary care docs, and they are starting, you know, we're still early days here. I mean, one of the doctors said to me, you know, we've only scratched the surface of what this is going to be able to do. And obviously, all those questions will have to be answered. But one of the, I think, very important issues is in those kind of private areas. Do patients want this used? Would they prefer to just, you know, or maybe they do want it for accuracy. It's one of those things like you'd have to consent to every patient. And that's, you know, a big bioethical issue. So you're having primary care docs use it. Some of the different technology companies have specific to specialties. So they have a special scribe that knows terms of cardiology. I don't know if this has yet made the leap into mental health. They're mostly focusing on the kinds of specialties where it's you're having a medical encounter that isn't psychiatric or counseling related. The other area they're focusing on using it in is transferring it literally over to the hospital. So it's going to be in the ICU. It's going to be at the bedside. Nurses are going to use it. So at that point, I'm sure someone will have to answer these questions like, should we really be using this for substance abuse counseling or, you know, mental health counseling, adolescent counseling? It's all a matter of, do you have technology that's capable of knowing the terminology, knowing what the important things are, and that's all in how it's trained, you know, with these large language models. And that's obviously like a big future question.
Do you know how it works if a patient objects to the ambient listening technology. My guess is that patients may be a little concerned to object because it could be irritating to a clinician, right? For the very reasons that it's positive for them, right?
Yeah,
you know, you're adding extra hours to my day or more work to me by rejecting this technology.
You know, obviously there's always those people, and those people are going to think it's all a big conspiracy, or they're going to really be legitimately concerned that they just don't want someone or a technology big brother listening to them. But they do have, and it's funny, the story elicited some funny comments, you know, people that had obviously remembered the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, where the technology sort of turns on the astronaut. But I think by and large, the patients, I did speak to some patients and I did review some of the studies that were done with patients, or surveys really that were done with patients. And the one woman I spoke to was thrilled with it. She thought the doctor paid much more attention to me. He wasn't constantly looking at his computer. He wasn't scribbling things down. It was just focus on me, very present, and I felt more listened to. So I thought that was interesting.
It's certainly more listened to, right? On different levels, simultaneously.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Now, remember also, the ambient scribe technology it's not going to be completely a lack of distraction, because one of the things, as they push forward to see what they can do with this in the future, one of the things that they're talking about, or that they're already doing, is what they call, like, it's almost like a nudge, a push notification. While the doctor is hearing a patient talk about these symptoms, they might like introduce a little note or a little alert that says, should you be testing this person for diabetes? And that's the kind of thing that, you know, that possibly could be annoying. But on the one hand, on the other hand, the idea is introduce prompts so the doctor doesn't miss anything. The one line it hasn't crossed, and this is not regulated right now, if it became, you know, software as a medical device, it would be different, because that would mean that it was actually kind of a black box that was making a diagnosis without the doctor being able to see transparently what the diagnosis was. So I think if you try to cross over, and I think doctors like it because it relieves them of burden of things they don't want to do, but doesn't try to replace what they do, which is, you know, make a diagnosis, even though, as we know, you know, it probably has some capability to make a diagnosis.
At least in certain areas, maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just how accurate is the technology?
Well, that's the funny part. You know, you keep hearing hallucinations, AI hallucinates. And there was one study that came out of the Permanente Medical Group, which talked about these mistakes and how closely can it listen? Is it really perfect yet? And I just thought it was kind of amusing, because the patient and the doctor were talking about the doctor's concerns about the patient's hand, feet, and mouth. And the AI came up with a statement that the patient had been diagnosed with hand, foot, and mouth disease, which, as humorous as it is. And then in another case, they said that the patient had been provided with a prostate exam, when in fact what had been said is they should schedule a prostate exam. So that's why none of this is ever allowed to just go through and into the record. The doctor still has to look at it, but looking at it takes less time than starting from scratch and writing it and, you know, going back to scribbled notes to put it in the computer. And so I think that's where the time savings are. But, you know, hallucinations are always a concern.
But theoretically, they should become less problematic as time goes on and technology improves. Would you agree?
Well, one would hope so. Yes.
You mentioned it. There seems to be a few healthcare systems that are leading the way here. Mass General, University of Michigan, Stanford, among others. Could you highlight what they're doing and where physician leaders should pay attention to work that's being done there?
Well, I think the best thing about them is that they're these are big academic medical institutions. You can see what they're doing because they're publishing it. It's all peer-reviewed studies. They've published some really interesting papers over the last couple of years about their findings. And I think they really have chapter and verse about how they rolled these things out, what doctors were asked to do, how many doctors wanted to do it versus others who were less thrilled about it. And I think because there's already a body of literature that health systems that maybe don't, you know, aren't part of, you know, University of Pennsylvania or some big medical research institution, there's a lot of data out there. And of course, look, you know, these companies that are marketing these products are some of the, you know, you've got Microsoft. Of course, they're really big. After them, it kind of gets down into smaller or upstart players. But there are a lot of companies that are sort of approaching it different ways, offering different bells and whistles, or focusing on, you know, just different kinds of special medical specialties. The one that I mentioned, there's a system that I used in the story, Ardent Healthcare, and it's not an academic medical center. It's a big healthcare system, but they're in some rural areas. And one of the things that was important to them was getting docs to want to work in some of these places. You have to give them something that makes their life a little easier. And this was considered a perk to be able to have something like this. And it enabled them to say, hey, if you come here, we have this great technology that won't require you to stay an hour after you're done making up notes. So, different hospital systems have different incentives that they can offer for this.
Have you actually seen the technology or what an exam room looks like? I'm trying to envision, is this something that the clinician wears? Is it something that's in each exam room? Kind of physically,
It can run on anything. It can be on the doctor's phone. It can be on a mobile device. It can be on a laptop. It can be mounted on a wall if you're in a hospital room. So it's the technology can basically be delivered by any device or any system. And, you know, I think that's what makes it easy, because if the doctor has his phone nearby, that's where the prompts might come up, you know, check this patient's blood sugar maybe. So that, I think, is one of the attractions of it. It isn't like it can go with you or stay where it is, whatever is preferred.
And I assume it's being used in telemedicine settings as well?
I wouldn't see why not. It's still in the kind of early days where they're trying to keep it in the actual encounter. Telemedicine has become such a big part of, you know, many doctors, the way they interact with patients and distance. And I've had my share of these appointments, and it's hard to see why it wouldn't work in the same thing. Although hasn't been the focus. The focus in these early days has been, the primary care patient encounters, the cardiology encounters, the ones where the patient is in with the doctor.
Or you may know that the law is kind of notoriously behind, and you mentioned that there's no regulatory structure at the moment. Do you foresee there being regulations or rules of the road for this technology as we move forward?
Well, again, that goes back to whether you cross the line. You know, a lot of these scribes are very specifically marketed as note-taking and documentation tools, but they are kind of moving closer to, you know, when does it cross from suggesting a diagnosis to, you know, saying this is the diagnosis, you should make sure this definitely is the diagnosis. I think the software as a medical device rules, basically, if it influences clinical decisions, it could fall under FDA oversight. There's a lot of enhancements that could come along that could trigger a question of, wait a minute, is this something we should be regulating? And, you know, then there are liability, you know, there are liability concerns. So let's say a scribe makes a faulty inference, or as we discussed, you know, with the hand, foot, and mouth disease, or if it omits a critical part of the encounter. You could kind of, what if it nudges a doctor towards a certain diagnosis, and then there's a gray area of responsibility if it's wrong? So there's tons of questions about this, and those people with big law books in their office should probably be thinking about them. You know, but when do you cross over from transcription to summarizing, analyzing, guiding? You know, and I think those are the kind of questions. Because there are decision support tools that do fall under software as a medical device. But some of the terms I heard were, it's ambient eye is, you know, decision adjacent. You know, it's coming close to making that decision, you know, for you. And I think Microsoft, when I talked to, I think he was the original, Microsoft acquired Nuance a few years ago, which was the kind of first one everybody knew about in this space. And they're very specific, you know, they call their technology Copilot. And he was very, and still with Microsoft, very specific in saying, we're not a pilot, we're not an autopilot, we're a co-pilot. So co-pilot, we're with the doctor, but the pilot is the pilot, and they're in charge.
We can only imagine what the cost to the PR firm for that that analogy was.
Yeah, well, it's like, that's it, co-pilot. But yeah.
But it does paint a picture, right? So yes. This is all very interesting. And something that you mentioned that really caught my attention in the article was the reference to Press Ganey in voice tones. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, there's this whole speech recognition, speech interpretation technology that's been starting to be used in research. And Press Ganey, as you know, is a surveyor of patients, and they probably dominate the market for those post-hospital surveys that you get, the consumer survey of their hospital experience. And those are the surveys that are used to help with, you know, getting extra money into the hospital coffers if the surveys all show high satisfaction. Anyway, Press Ganey is using some of its knowledge of patient satisfaction and patient experience to work with the speech recognition idea. And once they have that, you know, sort of melding of what patients say and what their voices may carry, then they hear how the doctor reacts. So one of the things they're looking at is the doctor being empathetic enough? Because hospitals use these surveys to help, you know, better train their doctors if they're getting bad satisfaction ratings. And I think one of the ideas is if we can help doctors, we could coach them on being more empathetic by kind of putting together what we know with what Press Ganey is able to determine from these patient satisfaction surveys. You're analyzing the content and the tone of the conversation between the patient and the doctor alongside the survey data from patient experience. And then you can coach the doctor in, you know, having difficult conversations, showing more empathy.
Very interesting. Some of our audience members will likely remember Dragon and Nuance for dictation software. Right. Who are the new tech players in this space?
Well, you know, there's quite a few of them. A couple that that were being used in addition to, obviously, Microsoft is the one that appears in the lion's share of the studies. Well, Nuance, because it was Nuance then. But there are, Ambience is one, and that's based somewhere, I think, in Texas. But Ambience is one. There's one called Augmetics that's publicly traded. A Bridge that was started by a cardiologist. I think it was piloted at UPMC, one called On Point, which is very much, you know, kind of a tailored to specifics like listening to patient visits, generating the structured notes, integrating it into any electronic health record you're using. But they emphasize specialty specific content, so orthopedic exams, sports medicine, surgical specialties, and there's another one called Suki. So what you've got is a lot of people crowding into the space and trying to differentiate themselves. Like, we're really good for this specialty, or, you know, you, if you're a small group practice, this might be better for you. I think you're going to see a lot of deals get done in this space. Everybody who comes up with an idea like this probably has the idea that one day maybe Microsoft will buy it, but it's a very hot space right now. Lots of, you know, names. I think, in fact, Microsoft Nuance have already acquired a couple of others. And the idea is these all have to integrate with whatever Epic, obviously, which is the majority of health systems that I've talked to, Cerner, which is now Oracle. You have to be able to integrate with these systems so that it can just go right into the electronic health record. And I think you'll also see, if you have an Epic system, for example, you'll if you have one of these systems, maybe you'll be able to allow it to add other features. So I think it's going to be a very, very little bit of a unsettled space until the dust settles and the players that are really adding value emerge beyond Microsoft. But there's definitely some out there that are already kind of have a good foothold.
As our time together draws to a close, I'm interested in what you see this space looking like in 24 months. Where do you see things headed?
Well, I think obviously in medicine, you know, there's some concern that this just means doctors will be told to use their extra time to see more patients. So I've heard some of that concern. So that will have to be kind of figured out, I think, a little bit. If the idea is to prevent burnout and save time, I don't know why you would want to, you know, use the save time to add more patients. But there's always, you know, one of the most important things in healthcare, obviously, is billing and coding and figuring out how is all this going to not cost us more money, or at least save us, you know, save us some money, but at least not cost us money. And all of these systems, the things that I think they do in addition to the medical encounter, just, oh, isn't this wonderful that we can transcribe all this, is to go to the people in the back office and say, you know, this, here's what you can code for this. Here's what you can code for that. These codes, it will auto-generate codes. And again, those have to be reviewed. But the idea is that that's going to save time and digging, and they're still going to be able to find ways to do this more efficiently than they do now, or do it more accurately, or do it more convincingly, I guess, for the payers. So.
Excellent. The Wall Street Journal article is Why AI May Be Listening In on Your Next Doctor's Appointment. My guest has been journalist Laura Landra. Thank you so much for being on Sound Practice, and thank you so much for your time and good reporting.
Thank you. Good to see you.
My thanks to Laura Landra for her time and insights. Ms. Landra's journalism is second to none, and her efforts have benefited patients and providers alike. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. That is holy cow, Batman and Robin, Ritual Kapow.